Welcome back to our podcast series, Financing Sustainable Development and Growth. In this series, we are diving into the strategies, governance frameworks, and technologies shaping the future of sustainable finance. In our last episode, we explored why sustainable growth is no longer just an option, it is a strategic imperative. Businesses must embed sustainability into their core strategies, not just to meet growing regulatory demands, but also to stay resilient in a rapidly evolving market. We also discussed the challenges of aligning finance with sustainability, where short-term financial pressures often clash with long-term environmental and social goals. Today, we are shifting our focus to a crucial piece of puzzle: startups and sustainability, financing innovation in emerging economies. Startups are driving some of the most groundbreaking solutions in sustainability, yet they face significant barriers in securing financing, particularly in underrepresented markets. I'm thrilled to welcome back Dr. Mudaliar, a thought leader in sustainable finance and digital innovation. Dr. Mudaliar, great to have you here again.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. So I know you have worked extensively in this space, and I'm eager to hear your insights. So let's dive in. Now, to start us off, why are startups so critical in tackling sustainability challenges in emerging economies?
The nature of startups is that they are more agile than larger corporations. They don't have the burden of legacy systems or established cultures, and are therefore more open to coming up with innovative solutions. Cost effectiveness is usually front of mind, so they are also more likely to leverage new technologies and methods. We've certainly seen in the telecommunications industry, for example, that instead of following the same industrial development path as the global north, startups in emerging markets drive what we call technology leapfrogging. So they can immediately adopt cutting-edge sustainable technologies like solar microgrids or artificial intelligence-driven systems to manage their resources without having to go through all of the legacy steps. Most emerging market startups are also founded by local entrepreneurs who have insight and knowledge of the challenges facing their communities or regions. And this enables them to design sustainability solutions that are not only effective, but also culturally and economically viable. The effect of this is a greater buy-in from the local market because the sustainability solutions are talking to what's important to that market. The other important reason why we have greater sustainability efforts in the startup environment is due to investor demands. Sustainable startups attract impact investors, development finance institutions, and ESG-focused venture capital, who will only invest if the new business has robust environmental and social risk management systems in place. They will often provide use of proceeds funding, which is money that is specifically earmarked for green projects. And this influx of capital accelerates the deployment of, for example, clean energy and sustainable infrastructure.
Okay, so are you seeing any specific themes or trends in how startups are operating more sustainably or capitalizing on this strong sustainability focus?
Yes, certainly there are a few key trends that I've noticed. Okay. So in the industry in which I work, for example, which is digital infrastructure, there is a strong move towards constructing and operating green buildings with smart infrastructure. The trend is towards eco-friendly materials, energy-efficient cooling solutions, and green energy products and services. And there are thousands of startups exploiting the opportunities that arise from this trend. The global green construction market is projected to reach $774 billion by 2030. This growth is driven mainly by increasing awareness of environmental issues and the benefits of sustainable building practices. So apart from the actual construction, there are numerous associated opportunities for new businesses, whether it's energy efficiency systems, waste management services like recycling, providing renewable materials like reclaimed wood or recycled steel and bamboo, or developing solutions to conserve water, such as rainwater harvesting or greywater recycling. On the topic of renewable energy and energy efficiency, another trend is decentralized energy solutions to overcome energy poverty, where we see startups driving off-grid products and services like solar microgrids, battery storage, and energy as a service models. An interesting example of this is M-Kopa in Kenya, which provides pay-as-you-go solar power systems to off-grid households, thereby improving energy access while reducing carbon emissions.
All right. It's interesting that the issue of lack of electricity or energy poverty that you've mentioned, access, drives new businesses. Are there other peculiar issues facing communities in emerging markets that influence the types of startups that are being founded?
Yes, another significant area of innovation is fintech, which is the use of technology to improve financial services. So what we see in developed countries, fintech startups are enabling green finance and carbon trading, for example, using AI to track carbon emissions in supply chains. And the trend there is towards an increase in ESG-focused fintech solutions, that is, for measuring and reporting to stakeholders. In emerging markets, on the other hand, where you've got large numbers of people who are unbanked, in other words, they don't have bank accounts and they still mainly use cash, the focus is more on socioeconomic development and access to basic financial services. There's this very interesting trend of creating user-friendly mobile solutions to enable people to make cash payments or receive cash from employers, grant providers, and even family who are living and working abroad. The other consequence of having large rural populations engaged in subsistence farming is the rise of agritech startups, which are using AI, Internet of Things, and blockchain to promote sustainable farming and reduce food waste. The fact that most farmers, even in rural areas, have a mobile phone makes these innovative agritech products and services accessible. And there are many examples of platforms or apps that have been developed for small farmers. You have Twiga Foods in Kenya and AgroCentre in Ghana, and many other examples. But these apps connect farmers and use data-driven logistics to reduce food waste. So the platform AgroStar in India has raised more than $100 million from investors. And what they offer is interactive voice response-based solutions for farmers. And that includes access to advice and information, as well as the ability to connect with other farmers. The fact that it is based on voice response makes it a lot more accessible as well for subsistence farmers.
Interesting. So how do financing landscape differ for sustainability-focused startups at the local versus global level?
So globally, the trend for funding startups has focused on venture capital and impact investing. We spoke about these models in our last podcast. Estimates indicate that current annual global startup funding is anywhere between $400 billion and $600 billion, depending on which source you use. And we have seen that venture capital investments in green startups have grown significantly. With impact investing, the focus is on generating social and environmental impact in addition to financial returns. So in developed countries, the funding is directed mainly to environmental initiatives, whereas in developing countries, there is a greater emphasis on socioeconomic goals, basic goals like ending poverty, improving access to clean water, sanitation, electricity, and education. Now, due to the specific challenges in emerging markets, there are some financing structures and models that are more common locally. And one of these is public-private partnerships. This is where governments collaborate with the private sector to fund sustainable projects that benefit communities. These partnerships are very effective in rural areas, for example, where utility services may be lacking and large corporations which operate in these areas can fill in the public sector gap to provide such services. An example of this would be a mining company, which is putting in water infrastructure for its operations, then also provides that infrastructure for local communities. Another example, which has raised significant investments in Brazil and South Africa, is in renewable energy. Private investors work together with governments to build renewable power plants, which will feed into the grid and also service local communities. An important factor is accessibility to funding. There is so much in the media about climate finance that is being committed by various organizations and governments, but actually, emerging markets and developing economies receive only about 14% of global climate finance. And if you look at the least developed countries, they receive just about 2% of this. So there are varying levels of support and accessibility for sustainability-focused startups globally versus in emerging markets.
Wow, that contrast really highlights how access to capital isn't equal across different regions. Now, funding is a major hurdle, especially when traditional investors prioritize short-term returns. So, Dr. Budliar, what innovative financing models can help sustainability-focused startups break through?
So one of the popular models that is used currently is the creation of funds through blended finance. Mm-hmm. We spoke about blended finance in the previous podcast. This is where we combine public, private, and philanthropic funds to mobilize private capital flows into emerging markets. In regions like sub-Saharan Africa and Latin America, blended finance is crucial for addressing the financing gap. For example, climate blended financing in emerging markets increased by 107% from $5.6 billion in 2022 to $11.6 billion in 2023. And this is expected to increase exponentially in the near future. The approach with blended finance is that it mitigates risks and makes investments more attractive to private investors.
Wow, that's huge. So how does blended finance achieve this goal of mitigating risk?
So firstly, public and philanthropic funds often provide concessional financing. So remember, I said with blended finance, we're combining finance from a lot of different sources, public,
yes,
private, philanthropic funds, and then they go into a managed fund.
Yes.
So because some funds provide concessional finance, that means you don't have to pay it back. It's not like a loan. So it can take the form of a grant. It could take the form of a low interest loan or a guarantee, but it's less than market value. This then reduces the risk for the private investors. So the risk has been taken by the public funds or the philanthropic funds, and that makes it more appealing for private investors to invest in high impact projects. And impact instruments like guarantees and insurance can protect private investors against potential losses, further lowering perceived risk of investing in emerging markets. Now, usually with blended finance, public funds are used to catalyze private investment. So the public funds will be used to cover the initial costs or provide some sort of financial cushion. This will then encourage the private investors to participate in projects where they might not otherwise have had the financial appetite. They would have considered it to be too risky. So blended finance structures will often also involve co-investment from both public and private sectors, as we said. And this shared investment approach also serves to align the interests and the interests of both parties and leverages the strengths of each sector. So by combining funds from various sources, blended finance can mobilize larger amounts of capital, enabling the financing of larger and more impactful projects. And we know that successful blended finance projects can be scaled up and replicated, attracting more private capital over time and increasing the overall impact.
Of course. And what about crowdfunding? Has that been effective in providing access to funds for startups?
Yes, crowdfunding has proven to be a very effective tool for providing access to funds for startups in emerging markets in particular, because it has resulted in democratizing the funding process and enabling entrepreneurs to reach a very broad audience. So the reason for the effectiveness of crowdfunding is firstly, its accessibility. The crowdfunding platforms provide startups with access to a large pool of investors, bypassing traditional financial institutions. The registration and application process is usually very simplified. And an additional advantage is that successful crowdfunding campaigns can validate a startup's business model and market demand, thereby attracting further investment from other sources. So it also allows the startup to build a community of supporters and early adopters, which can contribute to the startup's long-term success. And we have seen some notable success stories for sustainability startups on crowdfunding platforms. For example, the Keto platform has raised over $150 million and successfully funded the Eco365 startup, which develops water-saving solutions. Also in India, the Mila platform, which has raised over $135 million, helped a startup called AgroWave to raise funds to develop its mobile app to connect farmers directly with buyers. There are also platforms like Vakinha and IdeaME in South America that have helped startups to raise funds to, for example, install solar panels in underserved communities and for research and development for sustainable agricultural technologies. So certainly crowdfunding has become a vital tool for startups in emerging markets, providing them with the necessary funds to innovate and grow.
That's fascinating, and I'm sure our listeners are definitely going to take some serious notes of all these case studies and companies that you talked about the scope for startups. Now, of course, funding is just one piece of the puzzle. Policy and regulation can make or break a startup's success. So in your view, how can local policies and global investments work together to better support startups?
So both local policies and global investments play important roles in supporting the startup ecosystems. So local governments will often provide tax incentives, grants, and subsidies to encourage startups to adopt sustainable practices. For example, India's government offers various incentives for renewable energy projects, which has spurred the growth of solar and wind energy startups. And in South Africa as well, there are tax deductions and capital allowances available for renewable energy and other green investments. Implementing stringent environmental regulations and standards can also drive innovation in sustainability. For instance, the European Union's directives and regulations set ambitious targets for reducing carbon emissions, and this pushes startups to develop green technologies. Local governments can also establish innovation hubs and incubators that provide resources, mentorship, and networking opportunities for sustainability-focused startups. So the Startup India initiative, for example, includes several incubators that support green startups. Just on the topic of incubators, this is also a very effective tool that is being used in the development finance area. We've seen many countries, we have these incubators. One that should definitely be looked at as a case study would be the Climate Finance Accelerator, which is set up in the UK, that provides funding for lots of different startups within the climate finance space, but the startups are based in whichever country the CFA funds. So for example, I've attended part of these selection processes and presentations within Southern Africa, where new companies who have a very good idea for climate finance will come to a presentation forum and then pitch their ideas, and the accelerator or incubator fund will then provide finance to the successful bidders. So governments can also prioritize sustainable products and services in their procurement processes, thereby creating a market for green startups. Cities like Amsterdam have implemented policies to procure sustainable solutions from local startups. And all of these local policies have the effect of attracting global investments, which in turn can contribute to creating a supportive startup ecosystem.
Wow, that's intriguing. So what role do global investments play in your view?
So we see that global venture capital firms are increasingly investing in sustainability startups. In 2022, global venture capital investments in climate tech reached $37 billion, and that has been increasing exponentially each year. We spoke about how impact investors focus on generating social and environmental benefits together with financial returns. So funds like the Global Innovation Fund and the Green Climate Fund support startups that address sustainability challenges. And blended finance also plays a role. We've already discussed that in great detail. For an example of how local policy and global investment work together, we can look at Brazil's national climate change policy, which promotes renewable energy and sustainable agriculture, benefiting startups in these sectors. Under this policy, a Brazilian agritech startup called Solinfec has received substantial global investment to develop its precision agriculture technologies. So local policies create the enabling environment for sustainability startups, while the global investments provide the necessary capital to scale their innovations. Together, they form a robust ecosystem that supports the growth and impact of sustainability-focused startups.
Wow, that's a great point. And like you mentioned, policies and investment strategies can be game changers. And more importantly, you've also listed out some standout startups that have tackled sustainability challenges effectively. Now, in this case, are there any other successful global examples of startups tackling sustainability challenges beyond what you have already listed out so far?
Yes, there are many examples. One of these is Form Energy, which is a US-based startup that develops and commercializes low-cost, long-duration energy storage systems. So they have iron air battery technology that can store energy for up to 100 hours, making the renewable energy more reliable and scalable. Now, this company has raised significant capital, totaling about $680 million. Another example in the US is Biomakers, which is an agri-tech and biotech startup, also that focuses on improving soil health through advanced microbiome analytics. They provide detailed insights into soil biology and help farmers to enhance sustainability. That technology helps reduce the need for chemical inputs, thereby promoting more sustainable farming practices. In the UK, there's a technology company called Arrival that designs and manufactures electric vehicles, and they have raised almost $1 billion in funding. Now, these startups exemplify how innovative solutions can address critical sustainability challenges in energy and agriculture while still being able to show a good business case and raise significant funding. And there are thousands more examples like this.
Wow. Thank you so much for giving us so much of insights. I'm sure this podcast will definitely help a lot of people address or identify solutions to the challenges in this industry. So how can these models be adapted to address unique local challenges in emerging economies?
Well, this is already being done. There are numerous cases of local startups in emerging economies that are doing very similar things to what we see in the global environment. For example, NotCo is a food tech startup in Chile that uses artificial intelligence to create plant-based alternatives to animal products. They have an innovative approach to food production that reduces the environmental impact of agriculture by lowering greenhouse gas emissions, water usage, and land associated with traditional animal farming. The company raised over $350 million in funding, with investors including Jeff Bezos's Bezos Expeditions and Tiger Global Management. Another good case study is Husk Power Systems, which is a renewable energy company that provides affordable and reliable electricity to rural communities in India and Africa using solar and biomass microgrids. The company has installed over 100 microgrids, providing clean energy to more than 200,000 people. This reduces reliance on diesel generators and kerosene and significantly cuts carbon emissions. As a startup, it has raised over $40 million in funding from investors such as Shell, Swedfund, and the Netherlands Development Finance Company called FMO.
Right. So as we are nearing the end of this podcast and as we wrap up, I want to look ahead. Now, startups can be game changers in sustainability, but long-term success requires the right funding policies and support ecosystems. So in your view, how can startups become key enablers of both sustainability and economic growth in the long run?
I would say that there are three main areas in which startups can become key enablers of sustainability and economic growth. These are driving innovation, creating jobs, and fostering sustainable practices across industries. And there are several ways in which they can achieve this. So we know that startups are often at the forefront of developing new technology that addresses environmental challenges. For example, climate tech startups are pioneering solutions in renewable energy, carbon capture, and sustainable agriculture, as we've seen from the examples that we spoke about. Unlike larger corporations, startups can quickly adapt and implement innovative solutions to respond to emerging sustainability challenges effectively. Also, startups contribute significantly to job creation. In the US alone, startups created nearly 3 million jobs in 2022, and this has increased each year.
Wow, that's quite a lot. So what else would you like to add?
Okay, the global green technology and sustainability market is projected to grow from $11.2 billion in 2020 to $36.6 billion by 2025. This is compound annual growth rate of 26.6%. Now, this growth is driven by increasing investments in sustainable technologies and the rising demand for eco-friendly products. The opportunity in this sector is great. We also see that startups are promoting the circular economy by developing products and services that reduce waste and encourage recycling. By integrating sustainability into their supply chains, startups can also reduce their environmental impact and set new industry standards. This can lead to more sustainable practices across entire sectors. Now, for those startups that are focusing on renewable energy and energy efficiency, they can significantly reduce carbon emissions. For example, it is estimated that the adoption of renewable energy technologies could reduce global CO2 emissions by 70% by 2050. According to the International Renewable Energy Agency, the renewable energy sector could employ over 42 million people globally by 2050, up from 11 million in 2018. So the potential for sustainability startups to contribute to job creation is significant. And we know that the market for sustainable products and services is expanding rapidly. For instance, the global market for electric vehicles is expected to grow from $163 billion in 2020 to $802 billion in 2027. That is a compound annual growth rate of 25.6%. So certainly startups can play a pivotal role in promoting sustainability and economic growth in the long run. And I think that their impact will be measured through reduced carbon emissions, job creation, and market expansion.
Wow, that's a powerful vision. It reinforces the idea that sustainability and economic growth aren't opposing forces, they go hand in hand. So, Dr. Mudaliar, this has been an incredibly insightful conversation. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise and helping us demystify the opportunities and challenges for startups in this space. Before we sign off, a quick look ahead. In our next episode, we are diving into a game-changing topic: smart technologies and sustainable finance. So, to our listeners, be sure to tune in next time as we unpack how technology is revolutionizing the future of sustainable finance. Until then, stay curious and keep pushing the boundaries of sustainable innovation. Thank you.